Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Allegations of sexual abuse, harassment, and misconduct have rocked one industry after another, starting with Hollywood and working up to Congress. It usually doesn't make national headlines, but several high-profile scientists have been the subject of these kinds of accusations in recent years, and a 2014 survey found that more than a quarter of female field researchers have been sexually assaulted while working in the field, and almost three-quarters say they've been harassed. My next guest was part of that study, and she's now joined a federal legislative effort to address the problem by requiring universities to report findings of sexual misconduct by faculty to federal funding agencies. Catherine Clancy is Associate Professor of Anthropology at the University of Illinois and host of the Period podcast. Welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. This survey that was conducted in 2014, how surprising were those results? I mean, that a quarter of field researchers were saying that they had experienced sexual assault while in the field. And how was that finding received?
So I don't think that it was particularly surprising, to be totally honest. You know, those of us on the SAFE team, so that's me, Robin Nelson, Katie Hind, and Julian Rutherford, we were conducting this survey because we had heard so many anecdotes at this point, so many personal stories. We knew so many people who had been assaulted or harassed, who had experienced broad spread harassment, incivilities while in the field. And it really seemed like a unique space in which to study this because it's where we spend a lot of our time. It's where we collect the majority of our data. It's where our identities as scientists are built. And yet it was really understudied as a place that forms the culture of science. Our study, of course, can only speak to the sample that we collected, but our data are pretty consistent with what you find across a lot of workplaces. So the quarter for assault and the three quarters or so for harassment is something that you see across a lot of campuses as well as other workplaces.
Well, if there's one thing that we've all been learning over the past few months, it's that the number of reported cases of sexual abuse and harassment are far smaller than the number of incidents that actually happen. Most of it goes unreported.
The vast majority of people do not report their harassment experiences. And in fact, there have been a couple different studies of this, and it's somewhere around 5%. So whenever you look at, say, Title IX allegations or Cleary reporting or any other type of reporting to see, okay, how many times has this workplace or this campus had sexual harassment reported, you can readily expect that whatever that number is only 5% of what's actually happening on that campus.
Hmm. After that survey came out, what was the response? I mean, have you seen significant policy changes, cultural shifts in the past few years, or, you know, have things just kind of continued as they were?
There's been a lot of good and a lot of status quo at the same time, if that makes sense. The place where I feel like there's been the most movement has been across professional societies. So, you know, a lot of us in different industries and scientific disciplines belong to a particular professional society. It has a yearly conference, maybe a journal. And those places, individual faculty, the leadership of those different conferences and professional societies and different committees within them have really stepped up and said, we can't let this keep happening. And we can't create a welcoming space and advance science if we continue to have a workplace that is so hostile to women and gender minorities and sexual minorities. And so professional societies have written a lot of immediate zero tolerance statements. There have been some sort of third party movements that have been really inspiring. So there's this one group called the Astronomy Allies. And I learned about them because I also have another project, another survey that just came out this past year on women of color in the sciences, particularly in astronomy and planetary science. The Astronomy Allies were formed by some grad students who were tired of being harassed at conferences. And so they aren't officially affiliated with AAS, which I believe is the American Astronomical Society. But they kind of do their own thing. They wear these big buttons. And if you are being harassed at your poster or someone's trying to follow you to your room or you're just uncomfortable for any reason, you know, you can kind of find someone with one of those buttons and they will help walk you home. So it's kind of like a safe walk program slash a covering you if you need to get away from an uncomfortable situation. So there's a lot out there in terms of new codes of conduct, new policies, new groups. The place that hasn't changed is the actual university. Universities are continuing to interpret Title IX the way that they always have, which frankly, protects their liability, protects them from maybe additional lawsuits from perpetrators, but it doesn't really do anything for victims.
I'm talking with Catherine Clancy. She's an associate professor of anthropology at University of Illinois, and we're talking about sexual abuse and harassment in the sciences. You've joined this federal legislative effort now to require universities to report findings of sexual misconduct to federal funding agencies. I mean, that's really hitting professors, researchers, where the wallet counts, right? Saying if we figure out that you've been involved in sexual misconduct, there could be repercussions for your funding for your research.
Yes, that is the hope. That is certainly what I want to see happen. This legislation, it's a bipartisan effort, but it's been really pushed by Representative Jackie Speier in California. And she is just a wonderful person and has a very long history of doing work on sexual harassment. Her name has also come up more recently around efforts to change the way that reporting happens in politics, in Congress, because I'm sure a lot of people have heard that process is possibly even more broken than the Title IX process. What my hope is not that, you know, you create this list, say, of people who've had these been found guilty through Title IX of some kind of allegation. And my hope is that, you know, you send those to the National Science Foundation, to the National Institute of Health, and you just make it so that the program officers, the people who oversee these panels of scientists that come together and read grants and decide what gets funded, that they have access to that information, not that it immediately means that person is not going to get funding, but it at least gives them one more piece of information to help them make their determination. Now, of course, personally, my preference would be, you know, you're found guilty and you really shouldn't work here anymore. But, you know, I think at least creating some kind of mechanism where people know that you've been found guilty is going to make a big difference, because that's something that right now is still kept silent. And unfortunately, it's only a half solution, because what most perpetrators do once they have a case opened against them is they start looking for a new job, and then they go start a new job before that other case has been closed, which then the case never gets, they never finish that first Title IX allegation. They never finish the reporting of it.
Right. And so the case is never closed.
Yeah. So they're never found guilty or not guilty. So then that's all kept secret. And then they just go to a new institution. They just do it all over again. So there's sort of this pass the harasser thing that is happening in academia.
Given the prevalence of sexual abuse and harassment, how big a factor do you think that is in what we see from survey after survey, this decline in the number of women over time? You know, that in graduate school, it's about 50-50 men and women in the sciences in most fields. And by the time you get to the full professor level, there are fields where you're still in like the single digit percentages that are represented by women. Mm-hmm. How much of that dropout rate, I guess, is attributable to sexual harassment and abuse?
I would say a lot of it. I would probably even say most of it, personally. I mean, this is me making an educated guess, but I think it's important to recognize that sexual harassment isn't just come-ons. Most of what we've been hearing about for sexual harassment are the come-on side, which are mainly unwanted sexual advances and sexual coercion. And those are awful things to have happen to people. And, you know, they're more likely a one-time event or one major notable event in a person's life. But what's much more common are the daily slights and the put-downs. So the type of sexual harassment called gender harassment. So that's constantly being made to feel that because you're a woman, you're not good enough, that you don't have the same cognitive abilities or the same drive or ambition, that you're not as worthy, that maybe you're getting turned down for certain opportunities as a result of your gender. So those types of discriminatory acts that are harassing but around gender, as opposed to ones that, you know, they're all about power, but ones that seem to be about someone trying to get sex out of a colleague. Those are so much more pervasive. That's around anywhere from like 93% to 98% of sexual harassment is this other type, the put downs. And I really think that that's what drives a lot of people out of science and a lot of women specifically, even more so women of color than white women. So, you know, there has been actually a very slow increase of women in the sciences. But then when you drill down and look at what's actually happening, what's happening is that white women are increasing in the sciences. And that actually, even though there was a very slow increase of women of color in the sciences over the last several decades, the last couple of years are starting to show a decline of women of color. So we're now losing women of color from the sciences specifically, even as we're very slowly still starting to have some increases of white women. And to me, that means that we really need to be paying attention, not just to, again, sexual harassment, but these broader types of some of these subtypes of sexual harassment, like gender harassment, but also racial harassment, because women of color experience both of those things together. And that can be, you know, an incredibly isolating and hostile experience for them in the workplace.
My guest is Catherine Clancy. She's an associate professor of anthropology at the University of Illinois. If you look at a lot of your recent papers, your publications, they read more like reproductive biology than what I might expect anyway, of an anthropology paper. What's the connection in your mind between our scientific understanding of women's bodies, of female biology, and the way that women's health issues, maternity leave and motherhood issues, women's careers are all treated?
To me, it all comes down to trying to create a humane workplace. A lot of the people who do work not just on reporting of sexual harassment or the experience of victims, but think more about institutional culture, have shown that civility and respect are really important components of any workplace. And when you make one particular class of people feel unwelcome in their, you know, in their workplace, that creates actually a hostile environment for everybody. So when you put down women because they're women or because they, you know, because they're a primary caretaker of a small child and need to come home because their kid is sick, if you, you know, I've written recently on Twitter about the ways in which I have a 5-month-old and I've had a really rough 5 months postpartum. And yet, you know, the work expectations for my colleagues keep coming, even when I was on leave. They kept coming. And I just think that in general, we've created a workplace that is still so male-dominated in the way it conceives of things because it assumes that there are people at home taking care of everything else. And that's just not the case anymore. Men want to be involved with their children. Parents in general want to be involved at home. People want to have hobbies outside of the workplace. There's elder care to consider. I mean, there are so many other things in a person's life besides their work. And yet we continue to conceive of the workplace as this place where men go and don't have bodies and just have minds. You know what I mean? They're just there to do their work. And then they go home and then their bodies are taken care of by their stay-at-home wife. And so for me, the way that loops back to reproductive biology is that it's been really understudied. And so it's really hard for women to come to the workplace and not have a body when we're choosing to have reproductive bodies. You know, not all of us choose that, but many of us are. You can't come into a workplace and be nauseous from pregnancy and just turn that off. Right. It's just not as easy.
What are the ramifications for our whole society when certain groups, women in particular, women of color, are not represented in academia? These are the people who create our shared body of knowledge, our understanding of the world around us. When certain groups are excluded from that, what does that do to all of us?
I think that there's been a really oversimplified answer to that for a long time, which is just, we all suffer when we don't count heads and have a little bit of everybody in the room. And I really think that that's sort of how I think a lot of corporate workplaces and academic workplaces define diversity, is that if you can look around a room and you can count that there's representation from different constituencies, like, oh, I see one female person. Oh, I see one person of color. Good, we've done our job. That's actually not enough. We need to be thinking about inclusion, equity, and social justice. When we think about workplaces in that way, and specifically scientific workplaces, and we think about the ways in which everybody deserves a seat at the table, yes, but they also have immense important things to offer, right? There have been study after study that have shown that when you have a more diverse team, you solve problems in more interesting ways, and you solve them more quickly. There's also a lot of work out there in the feminist biology literature and just in feminist theory and critical race theory more broadly that says that when you have people with different lived experiences all working together, you ask totally different questions. You know, within reproductive biology, there are questions around women's health that just didn't get asked until there were women researchers doing that work. You know, not that there weren't important male researchers, but the field got pushed in really interesting ways when women got to ask the questions. And when women are asking the questions, designing the studies, doing the interpreting, that changes the nature of things. Same with when you include people from different racial and ethnic backgrounds and sexual and gender minorities, because all of those lived experiences mean you ask different questions.
That's Catherine Clancy. She's an associate professor of anthropology at the University of Illinois. She has recently joined a federal legislative effort to require universities to report findings of sexual misconduct by researchers to federal funding agencies. Kate, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. In the meantime, you can connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.